Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by John Stalica, Joby Fortson, John Titel, here for, did I get everybody?
Hey, I'm here.
Oh, David Griggs as well. David, yeah. I always seem to forget you for some reason. Okay. This is our Hoops HD report. We're going to go over all the news and notes about college basketball, talk about all kinds of stuff. David, did you have a comment?
Well, no, it was just a busy, busy weekend. And yeah, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. And boy, do we have some issues in the Big Ten to get to.
We have some issues. And let's, I think we should start with
the dark biggest. Web. Yeah,
I think we need to start with the biggest one, which is not the dark, your dark web conspiracy. It's what's going on at Michigan State off the court. These absolutely horrible allegations that the conviction of the trainer there, and which led to Mark Hollis, who had been the chairman of the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee last year, resigning along with the university president. And I guess the first question, and Titel, let me ask you this, is this the end of it? Or given that a lot of these sexual allegations involve basketball players, and now there's talk that the university knew about it, could this end up hitting more people in Michigan State? And by that, I might even mean their head coach.
It's hit so many people that you want to think it's over in terms of Larry Nassar, the team doctor, USA Gymnastics, like the whole board, Michigan State president, Michigan State athletic director, like they're running out of people. The next big domino to fall could actually be D'Antonio or Izzo or any of their coaches who knew something and hid something or didn't do the right thing. Izzo's on record saying he wants his team to be part of the healing process. There's just too much there, I think. Maybe he can explain it away. Maybe he didn't know anything. We've seen with the NCAA infraction stuff all summer long that the head coaches like Sean Miller and Bruce Pearl have to date escaped because it was the assistant coaches who were the bad actors, and the head coaches, in theory, didn't know anything and are innocent until proven guilty. With Izzo, there's just so many big players that did it. It wasn't like this was like some scrub who did one bad act and played 10 games and was gone. Three of the biggest players in the past decade, Travis Walton, your Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year back in the day, he knocked a woman off her bar stool by hitting her twice. His case was dismissed. Adrian Payne, two-time All-Big Ten player. I thought he was a good guy. He like made the news because there was this 8-year-old cancer patient named Lacey Holdsworth. He befriended her and like took her under his wing. And now there's a rape case against him and Keith Appling that was mishandled. Payne admitted, quote, he could understand how the accuser would feel that she was not free to leave the apartment during a sexual encounter. That all sounds a little sketchy. And we mentioned Appling. He's already in prison. He was sentenced to a year last July on gun charges. So there's enough big players who did bad stuff that I could see Izzo's head getting chopped off in the future. But obviously, when you have a Hall of Fame caliber coach, you give him the benefit of the doubt. But if there's enough proof that he did something wrong or should have done something better, who knows?
Well, but you, Joby, you've got the president and the athletic director already resigning over this. If those people know, shouldn't the head coach have known?
Well, the biggest issue, yes. The biggest issue is you have the Walton thing, which by all accounts he knew of pretty clearly. The one he has to deny is the gang rape allegations against Walton. But I think that's the big one. If he knew anything about that, you know, kind of a one strike, oh, there's a fight in a bar, you hit a woman, oh my God, you're a scumbag. But a coach shouldn't be fired over it, you know, even if he knows, I think. You know, the guy should go to jail or at least 1,000 hours of community service or whatever from the legal authorities. But you cross the line over into gang rape, you know, with players. That, I mean, hey, whoa. You know, that, and this is his, this isn't some, As pointed out by John T., this isn't some random grad assistant coach that just happened to be there. This is a guy that Izzo was grooming to be some coach somewhere. This is someone he took under his wing, that he trusted, that led his team, that he thought could be a leader of young men. Now, that's just an accusation, I guess, right now, et cetera. But the fact that he seemed completely oblivious to even the allegations to this, when there's almost no way you can be oblivious to such allegations, means you're burying your head in the sand. That's the one that really needs to sort itself out. And it could sort itself out that, hey, Izzo's going to be fine at the end of the day, job-wise. And they have a healing process there. But it also could really backfire in the way that the Sandusky did stuff brought down a lot of people, including Paterno at Penn State.
And that's exactly who I was thinking of. Was Joe Paterno, a guy who you thought was pretty much untouchable and immortal there, just, you know, completely falling apart, you know, with what happened with the Sandusky thing. And now the same thing here, a guy of, you know, a guy that, you know, Hall of Fame coach, and just one of the incredible coaches in all the country. And we'll see this just in the same year that we just saw Rick Pitino go down in Louisville as well. It's just, although I think this is way worse what's being alleged here. That,
well, Michigan State. It is. And this seems a little serious to have a cartoonish puppet on the screen. It just seems inappropriate. But this isn't, this incident is a Michigan State issue. But this problem is not a Michigan State issue or a student athlete issue. In my opinion, it is a national campus issue. This one is in the spotlight now, but this is nationwide. This is a recurring problem. Now, you know, more than one in five girls experience some sort of sexual misconduct or a victim or victims of sexual misconduct or rape while in college. Less than 10% of it is believed to be reported. Now, some of you are parents, some of you are parents of daughters. Would you feel comfortable sending your child to a place where one out of every five people is held at gunpoint? You wouldn't. This is actually worse. And I think the overwhelming problem here is that our campuses nationwide, young women are not safe there. And the people that are charged with overseeing this don't have a freaking clue what they're doing. Were they negligent? Were they selfish? Or did they just not know what they're doing? There's another one. Maybe some of you have heard of it. I think there's another school in the next week or two that's going to hit the news. I'm not going to say now which one it is for obvious reasons, but this is not even an athletics issue. And I realize that athletes get hit, and when it does, they're in the news. This man, this doctor, he was the doctor of the gym team and at Michigan State, and these were prominent players, so it's going to get airplay. But this goes on all of the time, and for whatever reason, the campus structure does not seem fit to handle it, and they do an atrocious job of managing this.
FERPA is an awful law. I don't want to get too political, but FERPA needs major revisions, and people in Congress are unwilling to do it because some of the best lobbying, you talk about corporations being able to lobby Congress. No one can lobby Congress better than a state university institution. And they want control of it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Jojoby and David, you know, I don't know if you saw the press conference or not. It was the Michigan, I guess, the attorney general who's going to be handling the investigation. You know, responding to the question about the fact that Michigan State announced that they're doing their own internal investigation. And he basically,
great. Yeah,
I don't give a damn what they do. They clearly don't know what they're doing, and I'm going to take care of it. And I mean, he just ripped into this, the university.
And hey, well, right. Good. And that needs to happen. And I never, it just blows my mind how campus officials who work in student affairs, you know, they're good at telling people to be quiet during quiet hours and getting people out of the girls' dorms during visitation. But, like, when something rises to a felonious nature, in this case, sexual assault or rape, they're awful at handling it. And so why are they – and you see campuses sort of insulate this and deal with it so ineffectively. And this has been going on for decades. And is there anywhere else in our society – where it's as prevalent as it is on college campuses? I don't think there is.
Anyway, I guess on that note, we do want to move on. We do want to discuss what actually has been going on the court. So let's kind of turn now to the news from today. One of the news pieces of news today, and I don't mean the 5 million overtime games that happened in a bunch of under the radar games tonight.
Great.
The top 10 polls that the top 25 polls that came out tonight. And I want to do a little something new here that we haven't done this season. I'm going to play a little blind resume game. It should be coming right up on the screen here. I got a pair of blind resumes up here. And Tytel, let me go to you here. Take a quick look at these two resumes we've got on the screen. Which one is better?
So, like, in terms of the one loss, they're almost identical in terms of they're on the road against a top 30-ish RPI team back in December by 7-8 points, like almost identical. If you look at the metrics, they're almost identical. The one road loss, I mean, it's hard to say. Like, I really think they're 1-1A. Neither of them stands out to me as head and shoulders above the other one.
I can't take it anymore. Who are the two teams?
but Joby, look at those tier one wins. Aren't they so much better than left?
I don't know who this team could be. Let's put it this way: tier one wins of Western Kentucky and Temple. I love Western Kentucky, but you know, these are probably Western Kentucky's. Maybe are not at large. Temple is most certainly not at large. Whereas, I mean, you could say that about Virginia Tech maybe to a degree on the other, but you're talking more protected seed wins and more wins against the field because even in the tier two, NC State's looking like a pretty good win even at home. And, you know, so, I mean, I definitely give the advantage, but John T's right. It's not like there's any shame in the second resume. I mean, they're both outstanding to look at.
I'll tell you what, let's go look at the ACC standings here. And Sleeka, let me bring in on this. Obviously, the huge game was over the weekend was Virginia's win at Duke, which we kind of just discussed a little bit. I guess the other team of note that was Virginia Tech picking up a win here that win at Notre Dame.
Those were a pair of bubble teams right there, where Virginia Tech had gotten some momentum with their win at North Carolina as well. So they're going in the right direction. They still have a little bit of work to do. I think Notre Dame, our old friend Tony Patelis, will probably be calling Chef Bubble after the Irish right now after their losses during the past week.
I don't even think Chef Bubble wants this team. Especially with the blowout loss tonight to Duke. I mean, it was to Duke, but Joby, is there any chance left for Notre Dame at this point?
Of course, because there's opportunities. You play in the ACC, you have opportunities. They are missing Bonzi, but they need to stay afloat with him gone, and they need to win more games than they lose from here on out without him, and then make a run of the tournament with him to show that they're very impressive. I will not write off until much later, until we have a two or a three on the months of anybody in a conference that has opportunities. Will they be able to do it? I'm skeptical they will be able to do it. But can they? Yes. I mean, look what they got left. At NC State, who's probably in the field right now. Boston College bubble team. Florida State in the field. North Carolina on the road in the field. Boston College bubble team. Miami in the field. Wake sucks. Pitt sucks. At Virginia's a one seed. I mean, that's a lot of opportunity.
Right. And but you look at that, six losses in a row for Notre Dame now. It's not.
That is getting rough.
But if they win like 6 of 8 or something, then or even 5 of 8, people aren't going to remember the 6-game losing streak, except they say, oh, that was without Bonzi. If in the tournament with Bonzi, and they need a number of those wins, of those remaining 9 games, they need to win 5 or 6 of them, and then win with Bonzi. Can't not win with Bonzi. They got to go to like the semis of the ACC tournament at least, if not the final.
Well, it's not just Bonzi Colson, but also Matt Farrell, who's right. missing in action. Right. It was one right. thing for Xavier, for example, last year that also had a 6-game losing streak and also missed Trayvon Blewett for a couple games. But at the same time, Colson is not going to be coming back until March, and there's no guarantee that Notre Dame is going to have the same chemistry once he does return.
Well, John, you mentioned Xavier. Xavier barely got in. They went into the Big East tournament, and I think we all felt that they needed to win against Butler to assure that they would land inside the bubble. So again, and this Notre Dame team is looking worse than that. Now, again, Joby brought up the opportunities. They have opportunities. But then again, I mean, at what point are opportunities not the reality? I mean, Texas Southern could get to the Sweet 16 if they win again, if they beat a 1 seed and 8 seed.
Let me ask about one other.
Texas Southern isn't playing those teams though, and right. Very few teams have the opportunities Notre Dame does.
Well, I mean, admit in the NCAA tournament. I mean, yeah.
Well, to be fair, Puppet, they're probably going to have to beat another 16 and then beat. Well,
okay, yeah. So they
1-8.
Okay, maybe I didn't make my point correct. Like, okay, Rutgers has the opportunities. Doesn't mean it's going to happen.
I want to talk about one other team that team that picked up another nice win this weekend, though, Tytel, was Florida State with the home win over Miami, avenging the road loss earlier. And this Florida State team, I personally think that's kind of being – they're kind of being undervalued nationally. They have a very nice profile, don't they?
Love the wins. If you're beating – the Florida win looks great now. Anytime you beat Carolina, obviously, and Miami, even though it went to overtime, the losses are all pretty respectable. I don't know if Oklahoma State or BC is making the tourney, so that'll be a bit of a strike one, strike two. But solid resume. I think that they're wearing white as of today. I haven't seeded eighth in my latest bracket. And like Joby said, the whole point of being in a power conference, you have plenty of opportunities. And it seems like to me that they're not getting worse as the season goes on. So I think that they're getting healthier. I think Kumaje, their big 7-4 guy, was out earlier this year. So I think that they will stay as a top 8 seed if I had to predict today.
All right. Let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule here in the
Okay, we got to mention NC State. I mean, again, the other really, really big win, NC State at North Carolina.
Don't we? Oh, I'm sorry.
The first time North Carolina and Duke lost to in conference on the same day.
Really? I heard another rumor about
they lost at home on the same day.
Actually the first time both teams lost at home, because I also looked this up. Duke lost to NC State at home, but North Carolina actually lost to Miami of Ohio.
Right.
So but that was in 1973. That was back in 1973 that they both lost at home on the same day. But NC State, the two road wins this week, clearly, I mean, putting themselves in a position where they are now, I believe, in the tournament and with a great chance to just keep moving up here at this point.
Are they so far inside the bubble that they're not even on the bubble? Like, I think they may be.
They could fall back again. Here's the upcoming schedule. This week they are hosting Notre Dame. I believe that's their only game this week, if I'm reading that correctly. What are you, Joby? What are we looking forward to here this week's schedule here in the ACC?
Yeah, a little known fact is that when Louisville goes to Virginia, that's actually the top two teams in the conference play, as far as standings go. Will Virginia be able to? I mean, this is one of the biggest Tony Bennett era regular season wins, without a doubt. Will they come back down to earth? Luckily, it's in the JPJ for Virginia, because if it was in the Yum Center, maybe Louisville comes up and bites them.
I could be wrong, but I think there's coaches in the Hall of Fame that don't have a road win against a top four team, a true road win. So, I mean, that might end up being in the biggest regular season game he ever wins. It's hard to do better than that.
The Syracuse win a few years ago launched this Virginia era, though, when it won the regular season title based on it. It was the biggest home game it's been. It's the sort of game that for decades Virginia would lose, and they won it, and now they've been winning a lot of these sort of games.
Two other teams I think they have big weeks coming up this week, though. Look at Virginia Tech at Boston College, home against Miami. Syracuse hosting Virginia, and they've got, I believe, one other game there at Georgia Tech. Syracuse maybe not hosting Virginia, but the game at Georgia Tech at least.
Chad, you hit your head in the shower this morning and put Syracuse in your field.
But Syracuse, they're Monday really night. Two teams that are on the bubble and have a great chance to move up, and that was my point with them. you know, Syracuse, not assuming they lose the Virginia game, still a chance with at Georgia Tech and hosting and at Louisville next Monday night.
And don't forget that Duke also has a home game at the Garden on Saturday against St. John's.
A non-conference game coming up of big note here for
St. John's has played pretty well out of conference.
The other story on the court this past week was the SEC Big 12 Challenge. Let's go straight to the SEC because bring it here as this comes up. SEC won the challenge 6-4. Kind of, did that shock you that they won it?
It's John, I couldn't hear you.
Just asking if it shocked you that the SEC won the SEC Big 12 Challenge Series.
A little bit. I mean, I was impressed that – I was expecting most of the home teams to win, and they did. Florida stomped Baylor. Alabama shut down Trae Young. I still don't understand Vandy over TCU. If someone can explain that to me, I'd love to hear it.
That was one of the shocking results. But what about Kentucky going to West Virginia, falling down by 17 in front of a crowd that was absolutely bonkers, like as hostile gets, and somehow through the poise coming back and winning. I think that from the under four timeout from the first half on, what an unbelievable performance by Kentucky.
Right. And you mean, also look at
very
look at,
talkative group tonight.
well, Sleek, let me bring you back in here. You know, what do you think of Kentucky now with that huge win? Isn't that kind of what they were missing on their profile? A big win over a tier one level team?
Well, it didn't matter if it was home or away. They just really needed a win against a protected seed of any kind, and getting one on the road will certainly help, especially after they dropped a close one at home against Florida. I mean, beating Mississippi State at home was nice, but that alone wasn't going to move the needle.
And then the other team that picked up a pair of wins this week was Auburn. They weren't part of the challenge, but they did win at Georgia and then pick up a home win over LSU and Titel. How good is this Auburn team? Is it time to start believing in this team?
I keep saying it's not, but after you keep saying it so many times and you look at the metrics, a lot of single digits up there, and you look at the polls and a lot of top 15 there, and I straight the schedule, 41 is not bad. I mean, I think you have to believe in them. I don't think anybody in this panel, I hope, would be shocked if this team doesn't make the Sweet 16, for example, but the metrics and the wins seem legit.
And here's the upcoming schedule: Auburn with a trip to Ole Miss and hosting Vanderbilt, a chance for two more wins this week, David.
Yeah, well, not just a chance. Those are games that they should win. I mean, if they're a protected seed, you need to beat non-tournament teams, especially at home. They should get both of those and get to – I guess that gets them to 21-2. But again, like just – one of the bigger surprises of the year, I don't think we were expecting them to finish in the top 10 of the conference, much less be ranked. They're getting up there. Where were they in the polls today, 11th?
Yep, 11th and 13th.
Yeah, okay. So how much more are they going to move up if they win both of these games, depending on what happens ahead of them? So,
at the same time, I'm not going to be shocked if Ole Miss ends up knocking off Auburn at home, because remember, they've beaten South Carolina, Mississippi State, Florida, and Alabama.
Hey, that is true. They are a bit of a home court hero, but I think Auburn's better than all of them.
Joby, I want to bring up one other team here, Texas A&M.
Why are we bringing this team we were talking about as a number one seed early in the season, and it's just gone away right now. I mean, that's the best way to say it. I think they're out right now. Yeah, you know, but given their early season profile, the very impressive early season profile, they can fight their way back in, given the depth. Once again, they're in a conference that gives you opportunities. You know, you look at that, you know, look at that schedule coming up. I think they could lose all those games coming up But if they split the next six games, which are all against tournament teams or bubble teams, they go 3-3, they're probably back in the field because they're out right now, in my opinion, but they're like first four out. They'll be back in with some good wins against like even a Kentucky at home as a home court Euro situation.
What's their conference record? 2-6. Bad. Do they need to get with at least within 2 games of .500, that mythical, if you're more than 2 games below, forget it type of one?
I think that, yes, David, I would agree with that, but that's how they get it. They go 3-3 in the next few, and then I skip the next one because then it's Mississippi schools. Yeah. And so, yes, I think if they go 3-3 over their next 6 games, they'll end up going 5-3 in their next 8. Yeah, but the next two just don't. I think it's Vandy and Mississippi State don't give you the oomph that those next three do.
Yeah, I'd like to bring up Vandy.
Why?
Well, I don't. Chad brought up Texas A&M. They're tied in the standings. They're both equal.
Oh, David. Bring up. David, I'm going to the Big 12. I was gonna ask you some questions, but instead,
I'd be happy to answer them.
Let me go back to you. It was almost a week ago now, but Oklahoma with the huge win over Kansas, which they followed up with the loss to Alabama. But any your thoughts on the Sooners here over the past week?
Still a protected seed, still really good. Not the one seed that I thought they were about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Alabama is really good, and it's. I don't want to knock a team for not getting it done at Alabama, but I think that's the kind of game that a one seed should be able to win most of the time, and they've dropped a few like that. But I still really like this Oklahoma team.
John T, what about Kansas? Kind of the opposite type of week with the coming off the loss, they bounced back with the win, although albeit it was only against A&M.
I mean, everybody's like, oh, this is the year that the Jayhawks finally lose the Big 12. Wrong. Yeah. They're 6-2. They're speaking of up to the minute. They're at Kansas State winning against their in-state rival by double digits on the road, further increasing their strength of schedule. They have the hardest schedule in the country, and they're succeeding with it, despite the fact that their center shoots like under 40% from the free throw line. Still self. I mean, unreal.
Kansas is a bizarro team. They have 4 losses. 2 were on their home court. 1 was in front of a very partial Kansas crowd. Their only other loss was at Oklahoma, who we just got done talking about, in a game where they led for most of it. And no shame in losing at Oklahoma. I don't think anyone's actually won there. But they have that. They have the West Virginia win. I don't ever recall a team that seemed to have an easier time on the road than they do at home. Here's Kansas State, who they really had to sweat out. In fact, a missed last-second shot would have won the game for Kansas State. And here's Kansas at Kansas State blowing it open. Explain that.
They're playing on the road. That's what it is. Let's move on. Here's the upcoming schedule. I think the key game to know is actually not coming up until next Monday night, though. That West Virginia at Oklahoma game, though, circle that. That could be a really good one coming up next week. But let's turn back over to the Big Ten.
Yes. Oh, we've got problems in the Big Ten.
We've got problems. Stalica, do we have problems in the Big Ten?
Dark web conspiracy. It's getting worse.
Yeah, my voice seems to have changed a little bit, but rest assured, it's not because of some dark web conspiracy that the puppet likes to put on us. I mean, we have to highlight Purdue here because now they've completed the season sweep of Michigan, and then they also had to grind out a nice win at Indiana where they trailed, I believe, the entire first half and traded leads for a good part of the second half.
Right. Well, what about Ohio State, Joby? They suffered the surprising loss against Penn State over last week.
That's a killer because we were really looking, you know, there was a debate whether, okay, is Ohio State a protected seed level team? The very legitimate debate because they were on a roll with the Michigan State win, you know, the game in basketball win against Michigan. and then all that momentum seemed to go away. Ohio State's still wearing white in my book, but that's the sort of loss that really, really knocks your knees out from under you if your goal is to be basically the top seed in a sub-regional at some point.
Well, pull up Ohio State.
I like their profile generally, but it's not a protected seed profile at this time.
I'll give you that, but isn't it just kind of one of those anomalies
that
every team goes through? And if they blow through at Purdue, is certainly they go to Michigan to Purdue, maybe not. But I still think
they're going to protect the seed, David.
Yeah, even if they win out,
if they go 6-2 with the two losses being to Michigan and Purdue on the road, which I would presume occurs. You know, they win the games they're favored in, they lose the games they're not favored in. They're not a protected seed. Yes, if they go 7-1 against that, I'm with you. But I don't think they go 7-1. As a matter of fact, given the Penn State loss, who says that the Nittany Lions don't come in and sweep them when they go to Happy Valley?
Right, and they sort of are missing those top-level wins. I mean, they have the Michigan State win at home, but their next – road win against the tournament team will be their first. So I'm kind of with you on that. It's just that I think that they were playing so well that they might, if they get that win at Michigan, you have to at least look at it.
Oh yeah. That means they go 7-1 They go 7-1. And by the way, they go 6-2. They're still wearing white.
Right.
Tytel, I know we seem to ask this every week, but let me ask it again here. Is there anybody else besides those top four that you think can make a run at a bid, or are we almost locked in at this point?
If you think I'm naming the number five team, you can forget about it.
Why not?
As far as Maryland, had you asked me in the first half of their game against the Spartans, I would have said maybe. I am no longer a believer. They've had injuries and they're young. I had little hope for them anyway. I think that they are heading off the bubble and maybe not returning the bubble anytime soon.
Well, David, here is the upcoming schedule in the Big Ten as we record this. Nebraska is losing by 10 at Wisconsin. But is there any game that you're specifically circling here this week?
Let me see. No.
That question. No.
I don't think we get a single matchup between two teams inside the bubble this week. I would like to bring up Iowa, though.
Why?
They have the same number of conference wins as Texas A&M, and you got to bring them up.
Let's go Big East. We haven't discussed the Big East yet. Where Villanova picked up a pair of wins. Stalika, your Xavier team also picked up a win over Marquette this past week.
Yeah, they looked pretty good throughout the game, and Trayvon Blewett actually reached the 2,000-point plateau in his career, and Xavier actually ended up getting a much-deserved weekend off after a front-loaded conference schedule where they finished 7-2, so they'll actually get a decent week of games against St. John's and Georgetown that are going to be about as winnable as you're going to find. But I think the other game we also have to pay attention to was Creighton that also had to slug one out against Georgetown a little bit, because Georgetown was matching them 3-for-3 in the first half. And I forget the name of the player, but there was one of their front court guys from Australia where they actually lifted a red shirt because the Blue Jays are starting to run a little low on depth, but actually turned out to have a little bit of a decent role in their win against the Hoyas.
Right. But Tytel, there's the upcoming schedule this week in the Big East, and interesting week for a couple of teams, including Marquette with a pair of home games that you know, if they can't win those two, it'll become four losses in a row for Marquette.
True. They're not on life support at all, but certainly losing a couple of home games is not going to help. I'm also looking at Villanova. They should beat Creighton at home, and they should beat Seton Hall at home, especially because Creighton got bit by the injury bug a couple weeks ago with Martin Krampels, and Seton Hall has been kind of trending downward the past month. I really think that I want to lock in Villanova as a one seed now. I've seen them in person. They're that good.
Are they still that good without Booth?
Of course not, but like it's not like he was the star. Jalen Brunson against Marquette in the game, if my memory is right, I think he had 31 points and zero turnovers. Like, what more do you want from a point guard?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fairly solid day. I'll give you that.
And he single-handedly put him on an 11-0 run. That was Jalen Brunson 11, Marquette 0. It was extremely impressive.
Is anyone still under the impression that Seton Hall is a protected seed? Because, I've just not seen it for a while now.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's pull up the Seton Hall profile. And I agree with you, they are not a protected seed right now. But as we've mentioned with a lot of these teams, the opportunities are absolutely still there at Villanova, at Xavier, among others. Actually, Villanova twice still to go here.
Tons of on the road would be a nice win. I mean, if he got it.
Can they get it, though? I mean, they won at Louisville and it before Louisville kicked it into gear. And the win at Butler was nice, but I mean, it just seems like when you look at their losses, they've been blasted. I mean, Marquette, these are teams that just blew them away.
Well,
and they lost at Rutgers. I mean, for crying out loud.
Tytel, I know you don't want to, you don't, well, I guess you had a 2-0 week.
Well, sorry, we didn't get to talk about DePaul, who has the same number of conference wins as the Texas A&M team.
Actually, I want to add a footnote on DePaul. It was a nice little troll job in their win at Georgetown where they were wearing their PK80 jerseys, you know, the same tournament that Georgetown bowed out of.
Oh, that is brilliant. I did not know that that had happened.
John T, Pac-12, your Wildcats still continue to roll, picked up a pair of home wins this week. Anything that you're concerned about with them, or do you think that they're just going to take this conference at the end of the day?
How much time do you have from the concern level? Oh, my God. So we're up 4 points with 10 seconds left at home where we never, ever, ever lose. Utah hits a three. Alonzo Trier gets called for a charge when he's trying to get free on an inbounds pass. Utah finds a guy under the basket for the game-winning upset layup, and the guy misses it. It was a tough angle, and he almost got fouled. I think it was the right call, but I'm biased, so hard to tell. Yeah, a lot of concern on the defensive end still for the Cats. As far as the Sun Devils, they have a losing record in conference, and they're still ranked in the polls. Joby, come on! What is going on?
Well, it just goes to show you what a beast the Pac-12 is this year.
It's a great – they have that great preseason record that's still keeping them up. And, yeah, I mean, they are a tournament team right now. But thank you. Finally, they're out of protected seed land. Finally. Because it was to use my ratings is they were just sitting there at like 13, 14. I'm going, they are not the 13th or 14th best team in the country. I do think they're a team that should wear white, though. And right now, yeah, I have them as a 6, or the not me, but the power rating has them as a 6. That's not outrageous for their location. And Arizona's a 3. I think I don't think those are wild rate, spots in a field right now as you go.
Well, I think one other team here, USC, that's really trending up right now, looking like they're going to be back in the tournament picture. But is there a fourth team? David, a Washington or maybe even Utah at this point?
I like Washington. And the win over Kansas is just better than anything Utah or Oregon or anybody else has been able to produce. And, I mean, they're certainly hot and cold. I know our colleague Matt doesn't like them at all. But when you look at their profile, which I'm assuming you're pulling up here, at USC, who we just talked about, Kansas away from home in front of a very, very partial Kansas crowd, that's not a bad top of the profile. And when you look at what stinks on it, is it really that bad? I mean, Providence, Utah, these aren't the kind of losses that you really ding someone for.
Gonzaga's wearing white right now.
Yeah.
They're not a tier two loss for all practical purposes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if you look at these two profiles, here's Washington on the left, Utah on the right. Unlike what we discussed with some of these other conferences, there's very few opportunities to improve in the Pac-12, although I guess Washington has that this week, Tytel, heading to the Arizona schools.
Certainly. I mean, that's, I think this year we can all agree that that's the biggest road trip of the season, especially when both teams were ranked higher than they are. Well, Arizona's gone up, but ASU was ranked higher, didn't have a losing record in conference. The Huskies are like not too many players away from being great. I mean, 11-2 at home, a bit of a home court hero, but winning record in conference, metrics are not that strong. The win over Kansas is going to hold a lot of weight all throughout March, but they certainly need to win some games, and beating one or both of the Arizona schools is a great way to start.
Okay, then. Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here in a second. And Salika, what are you looking forward to besides maybe those Washington games, if anything?
Well, that would have been the first thing I'm looking at, but I'm also looking at a couple of the rivalry games where USC makes their first trip to UCLA, and Utah, they really need to get this win at Colorado if they're going to hold a candle as far as any at-large hopes go. But I can also tell you, Arizona State's, you really can't keep splitting weeks like they've been doing for the past month.
Both those games at Washington are huge for both teams. Arizona State needing to win to kind of stop the bleeding. Washington needing it to put themselves further inside the bubble, or inside the bubble at all, I guess. So a big weekend for Washington.
Well, let's turn over to the American Conference and –
do we have to? God.
Joby, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Are they a protected seed right now, a 2-seed, a 3-seed caliber team? They are 8th in the polls.
Well, they are. I call them the Anthony Michael Hall of college basketball from 16 Candles. They are king of the dipshits.
Not as good as Stalicious BD comment from a few years ago, but
they're undefeated in conference. They're blowing through what is a mediocre conference. They're doing the job they have to. Their losses are not embarrassing. Yes, they haven't put up the plethora of wins. If they finish with only 2 losses at the end of the year, yeah. And right now, who's going to stop them in that conference? I mean, maybe the road game at SMU or Houston, but, you know, they've right now, have they done enough to be a 3 or a 4? I don't know. But when you compare them, I said this earlier, compare them to Michigan State for a second. Michigan State beat North Carolina, but they're not leading a mediocre conference like Cincinnati has. Not a ton of difference between the two. And Michigan State's a no-brainer. They're a 3 because they're a preseason number 1 or 2. They beat at Maryland. Well, hey, at Temple, you know, it was a tier 1, you know, win. You know,
it's no, it's not.
Yeah, the profiles are actually extremely similar, and I don't know if either deserves a protected seed, but if anyone, maybe Cincinnati because they're leading their conference. Does and have dominated in a dominating fashion, or at least dominating record-wise in fashion. I know some of their games have been tight.
Yeah, well, they are way up in the rankings. Now, that isn't the end-all, be-all, but you would presume that if the voters like them, then the NABC advisors probably like them as well. I don't know, I know you just did a bracket. Where did you have Cincinnati?
I have them as a solid – or certainly trending upwards because it seems like they might sweep this conference. I really thought Wichita was going to put up a fight, but I'm having some serious doubts about the Shockers. If they continue to win, I can see them getting up to 3. I think 2 is pushing it, but certainly possible if they're one of the only 2-loss teams in the nation come mid-March.
Wichita is not putting up the fight that we thought they would, but Houston is the team that Cincinnati and SMU are both going to have to look out for.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. Let me ask you this question about SMU, whose profile I just put on the screen here. Is this SMU team, the way they're playing right now, including a loss at UConn, an NCAA tournament team?
I mean, that's rough. for those of you who like to say that losing a UConn bans you from the tournament, then obviously no. But it was on the road, so they at least they have that to fall back on. I have them in on the bubble right now as an 11, and it's based on a couple facts. Number one, like, they beat Arizona and Wichita State, who both could be top four seeds, maybe, if Wichita gets their butt in gear. The metrics, decent, not overwhelming, but not terrible. Northern Iowa loss, hard to explain away. Tulane loss, hard to explain away. Losing to Cincinnati by 20 sucks. Explainable. Yeah, I mean, they're certainly going to have to win down the stretch. They played Cincy once and Wichita State once. They get them both at home. Houston, they have home and away. If this team, what do they got, like about 9 left and they're 15-7, if they go 7-2 and are 22-9 with wins over Arizona, Wichita, Houston, and maybe Cincy again, like, that seems to me like a tourney resume.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Well, here's the upcoming schedule here in the American. Houston at
Cincy. Ken, are you going to watch every single one of these in their entirety?
I'm sure not going to watch any single one of these, correct.
looking forward to that Houston. Yeah.
Houston, Cincinnati, Wichita State at Temple, a couple of games kind of circle there, I think, though, David, right?
Yeah, Houston especially, like, they're every time I say that I think they're good, they go out and lose, and then every time I give up on them, they do something amazing. A fringe bubble team, if you win at Cincinnati, chances are you're not a fringe bubble team anymore. But, you know, that's probably the one I have circled the most. There just isn't anything else really there. Tulsa, South Florida, in the drink bleach game. Going on down there.
No, I was going to say you should bring your protective eyeglasses from the eclipse over the summer, but yeah. Houston and Central Florida is going to be worth watching.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about protective eyeglasses, take a look at the Atlantic 10 here. And there's nothing to look at this conference, though, Joby, other than Rhode Island picking up a couple more wins this week, right? No.
exactly. I mean, poor Sleeka was talking offline. This poor Davidson, you know, hey, we're going to show some ability, and Richmond has to crap all over them. Richmond with that amazing, you know, 8-13 overall record, but 6-3 record in the conference. I mean, it's just as amazing. Rhode Island, luckily, played out of conference and did decent. You know, they had the Seton Hall win, for instance. I think they had the Providence win, as I remember. Those are nice little wins to show, hey, we can actually do something against teams outside our bad conference. So I do expect the Rams to be in a good position. Mark's probably not protected seed, but, you know, playing a lower seeded team than they are in the tournament. And I actually think the Rams are a good team. They just unfortunately don't have any opportunity to show.
Right.
They are good. Yeah,
David, I was going to say this week they're at UMass, and UMass has been a little bit dangerous at home. They've been Georgia, among other teams, and then at VCU on Friday.
David. Yeah, right, yeah. And I do think that they're a good team, but I just kind of echo what Joby said. Now, they did really have to sweat out a Duquesne team that's certainly been entertaining this year. Lots of overtime games and close games. But how about this Richmond team? I said at the beginning of the year that I thought that they would be good in this conference, and they are, and they have been.
Titel, Nevada, another team in what looks like treading towards a one-bid conference. I know there's a Boise State argument out there. They suffered a loss to Wyoming in just a great game. For anybody that stayed up late, didn't bounce. No, I'm sorry, they did not play this weekend, did they? So that was the only game they played.
That was last week.
Last week, yeah, Wednesday.
It was a great game. I think we were all still up watching it.
I wasn't.
Worth checking out the highlights from that. Justin James with 33-10. The Martin Twins, 46 points combined, 11 boards, 11 assists, 4 blocks, 4 steals. They really are like the greatest transfer ever because they're a package deal and they're both good. But still not enough to beat Wyoming.
Right. I'm still not, you know, well, you still think, Titel, that Nevada's fairly safe at the moment, despite that loss?
when your overall record is the same as the team right behind you and you're only one game up in the standings, you're absolutely not safe. I certainly think they have the edge, and I think they have the better metrics, and I think they have the better team, but I wouldn't say they're safe.
Okay. Well, where would you have them in terms of seed right now?
I got them listed as an 8, I believe.
That's pretty safe. Well, I mean, for now, I suppose they could blow it, but that's several lines inside the bubble, isn't it?
Yes, but there's RPI, I think, is only going to go down when they play the rest of this crappy little conference, right?
Yeah, it will. Yeah.
They host Fresno State. They're at Colorado State this week. David, do you think that they have to worry about maybe dropping another game this week?
Well, if they drop it, then they should blow through both of those. Yeah. Wyoming is actually, if they were going to lose a game, it would be either at Boise or at Wyoming. It's not the easiest place to win. When compared to what's harder, winning at Wyoming or beating Fresno and who's the other team they're playing, somebody bad, Colorado State, it's easier to win both of those than it is to win at Wyoming.
And Wyoming already has wins over Wyoming, has already wins over Boise State, South Dakota State, who's one of the better under-the-radar teams. I mean, Wyoming can do this. It's not was it an upset? Sure. Was it a shocker? In my opinion.
And I agree with that. And I like this Boise team, although they've still – oh, you've already gone on to the next one. So.
I think we may discuss Boise again in a couple of weeks if they can keep winning, but I'm not quite ready to spend a lot of time on them. But let's talk a little West Coast Conference because we're running out of time here. And Stalica, in the West Coast Conference, are we just waiting for St. Mary's Gonzaga round two because nothing else matters in this league?
Well, they've already completed the sweep of BYU, so it seems like about the only other notable result we'll probably see will be BYU winning at Gonzaga for the umpteenth time. So unless St. Mary's slips up somewhere else, I do think this is the Gales League to lose at this point.
Well, Tytel, that BYU at Gonzaga game is coming up on Saturday. Do you think the Zags are going to slip up again?
I don't. I mean, they seem pretty solid at home, and when your only loss is to a team that's 21-2 in terms of your conference, I think you're good. Joby, what do you got here, guy? I got St. Mary's 24 and Gonzaga 26 in the JNG. Are they neck and neck, it sounds like?
Yeah. It wouldn't be the case had St. Mary's not won against Gonzaga earlier, obviously, because the Zags have a much more impressive overall resume out of conference, but that one win – has propelled. It's more of a recent win, et cetera, and it's head-to-head. It could go either way. The last few days, Gonzaga was ahead of St. Mary's. So it's back and forth. They'll be seated probably around the same area. And the team that wins, the team that wins out between in the presumably three games that they play against each other will probably be the higher seed.
On that note, let me pull the screen down here and run through any other topics or any other final thoughts that we each have. And Stalica, let me start with you.
We usually don't bring up teams like Vermont until it's under the radar, but it was actually a pretty interesting story in their last home game where they actually had to revive one of their fans who had suffered cardiac arrest. So thankfully they had an alert doctor on the bench and also what seemed to be two other doctors in the stands that were also able to revive him. So there was a chance from what I had read that had this happened anyplace else, they might not have been able to revive him at the hospital in time. So definitely got to give a thumbs up to the UVM medical staff here.
Wow. Yeah, a scary moment.
Scary moment and a real great story because of the fact they were able to revive him. And Tytel, I got to go to you with this. I don't know if you're quite expecting it or not, but speaking of heart problems and maybe medical issues and maybe an EKG, I have an EKG on the screen here for you to take a look at.
For any of you who missed the Ball State Akron double overtime thrilla in Worthen Arena on Saturday afternoon, just look at it. I mean, I'm unfortunate to have never had to deal with an EKG monitor, but from what I've seen on TV shows that do medical dramas, it looks like it. Back and forth, back and forth. There was a three-pointer right before the buzzer at the end of the first overtime by Jamond Ivy, who had 48 points, send it to double OT before he lost. Ball State dismissed a player right before the game. and they have another guy who's out with suspension, and they lost to Akron 15 straight times, and they still win by 5 points in double OT. Easy contender for the short list for game of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Any other thoughts, John T? I didn't mean to force that one down your throat.
I think you did, but that's okay. In terms of coaching, I think we can agree that as far as the regular season right now in late January, four of the better teams in the nation, not best, but better, Purdue, Virginia, Xavier, Cincinnati. Before you put any of these teams in your final four, much less your elite eight, I need to alert you to their coaches' track record, not success, but track record in the Sweet 16. Matt Painter, 0-3. Tony Bennett, 1-2. Chris Mack, 1-3. Mick Cronin, 0-1. That's a combined 2-9. All good coaches, and maybe the reason they haven't won in the Sweet 16 more is because they've not had as good a team as they have right now. I get that. And I'm not saying that they're all going to lose in the Sweet 16. I'm just saying be cautious because they don't have a good track record of winning once they get there.
Well, just don't put Tom Izzo against Bennett, and he'd be 1-0. So.
Joby, any other thoughts from you?
Yes. Speaking of the Big Ten, I've noticed that Big Ten teams across all of their resumes are trending down on the JNG. Even Purdue slipped to fourth behind Kansas right now. I'm not saying that's how the committee would view it, but you're seeing resumes trend. The reason why it goes to the numbers. You know, I always bring the numbers up. All right, ACC, three team after Saturday had three teams of their 15 over 100 in the RPI. Same for the Big East. Big 12, zero. SEC, one. Even the woeful down Pac-12 had only three teams of RPIs over 100. Big 10, eight. That will kill you. I mean, you don't have the opportunities. Moreover, you beat one of these teams. Hell, your fourth place team is Penn State, who's over 100. That is a killer to teams like Ohio State, Michigan, who are trying to build strong profiles to get up the seed list. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough even for Purdue to hang on to their number one seed over time if they lose to some of this crap. They've got to run the table. It puts a lot of pressure on the top end of the Big Ten. I don't know if all of them can succeed at it. They're all probably – the big top four will probably all be in at the end of the day. But don't be surprised if they are underseeded to what a lot of the bracketology experts have for them right now.
Good Lord, there is a dark web conspiracy against Nebraska. Is that what you're saying?
There is. And it's right in front of our face.
Yeah, and David, as we record this, Nebraska has suddenly come all the way back to take a lead on Wisconsin late. And I think you have a little bit of news about Tim Miles.
Yes, it is. And I mean, again, this feeds right into my final thought. Nebraska has come back. They have a long stretch of winnable games in front of them. It's just phenomenal coaching. And it was just really exciting to hear the announcement over the weekend. The Basketball Hall of Fame, the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, is being renamed. And I think that this person has done more for the game of basketball than even Dr. James Naismith did. Let me see if I can get this on the screen.
Get your buzzer ready.
There it is. It is being renamed the Tim Miles Basketball Hall of right there. I'm just really excited about that. And he deserves it too. Like all he's done for the game more than Naismith.
Oh, David, I got one thing to say to you.
What's that? This is part of the conspiracy. You are a part of it. That's why you keep buzzing it every time I try to point it out.
Have a great night, everybody. And enjoy the Naismith Hall of Fame if you happen to be out that way.